The EarthX 2024 Environmental and Sustainability Congress of Conferences is happening in Dallas, April 22nd through the 26th, bringing together all sides with one important mission: protect our planet. For info, earthx.org.
From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, after the Smokehouse Creek fire, what are the lessons to be learned, how Texas can do better against these massive wildfires? This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The Smokehouse Creek fire is the largest wildfire in Texas history. It burned over 1 million acres in the Panhandle. The fire started on February 26th, and it spread across Roberts and Hemp Hill counties. The fire destroyed hundreds of farms and ranches, killed thousands of livestock, and devastated the Panhandle. The fire was declared 100% contained on March 16th. The cause of the fire remains under investigation, but the Texas energy company Xcel says its facilities appear to have been involved in starting the fire. A woman whose home near Canadian was destroyed in the fire has sued Xcel, alleging a fallen utility pole started the blaze. The suit claims the company failed to properly inspect and maintain the pole, and it was rotted. It then splintered and snapped off at the base and caused the fire. The recovery from the Smokehouse Creek fire started immediately after the fire was out, but it's going to continue for months, even years. Coming up, we're going to hear what is needed for the long-term disaster recovery and what are the lessons that need to be learned to deal with the next massive wildfire. I spoke with Andy Holloway, Hemp Hill County, Texas A&M Extension Agent.
Well, David, I'd say that each day's a better day than the day before. It was so devastating to our community, to our ranching community, to our way of life, that it's going to take a long time to physically and fully recover from this wildfire that really destroyed not only our ranches and our homes, but it really destroyed the way we love to live and the way we're good at living, at producing food for our American public and actually for the world. So our ranchers are still going through a hard time, and they will go through a hard time in the future until we get more rain and, things settle down as it regards our environment. So it's just one day at a time, but like I said, it's a little better today than it was yesterday.
So how's the prairie right now? Before it was solid black, I hear that there's starting to be some grass coming back. Y'all did get some moisture, but you got to keep the cattle off it. Is that the idea?
Yes, David. We got about an inch of moisture night before last, some a little more than others, but it was a nice gentle rain, which is exactly what we needed. It's just the beginning of what we need, though. And yes, the grass is beginning to come back, particularly outside what we call the sand hills. The sand hills are the ranching country that's kind of along the Canadian River. And the sand hills are very delicate. They blow if there's not cover on them from wind erosion. And then if you get real heavy rains, they can wash and have a lot of problems from water erosion. So it's a very delicate situation. The country that burned south of the river, that's a different kind of soil type, is recovering quite well. It's already green and pretty. It'll take months for that country even to fully recover, even if we get good rain. But it is very encouraging to our ranchers to see that green coming, and to our community. It's a long process. We had such tremendous grass that we went into the winter with. Some say the best grass crop that we've produced in many decades and maybe ever. And, all that grass burned up, and that's what caused the fire to be so bad is all the fuel that we had there. So anyway, it's a rough situation, but it's getting better every day. And the green grass, because of the moisture that we've had, is certainly very encouraging.
Well, the genetics of the cattle, that's priceless. That's something that the cattlemen have been working on for generations, just to get the right kind of herd that can produce up there. How much of the cattle were lost?
Well, just in my county, we have on a normal situation about 23,000 mother cows, and in our county alone, Hemphill County, we're estimating about 7,000 cows, and I'm talking about mother cows, perished. And David, one of the complications of this is that all those cows, or most of those cows, were right at the very last stages of their pregnancy, which was an opportunity for the rancher not only to get a calf out of that cow, but to continue to ranch those genetics that you talked about that are very important to his future. A lot of these ranchers, as you well spoke, have spent many thousands of dollars and many years culling and selecting particular cattle to be replacements, and those genetics now are gone. And so it is a devastating situation that could set these guys back many years. But our people are resilient. The ranchers are very wise. They've been through wildfires before, none this size and big. But our people are not quitters, David. And thanks to the many loads of what I call hope, I'm talking about hay and fencing supplies, feed, that people from over 30 states across the nation have sent to Canadian, Texas, to Hemphill County, to Miami, Pampa, Texas, Border, Texas. That gives us a chance to recover, and we're so grateful for America's generosity and the outpouring of care and thoughtfulness, kindness that we've been shown and given. It's been truly amazing. And David, I want to thank you for reporting on this, because so much of our news media these days, one, don't even report about our circumstances, or two, you know, they don't really understand how important this is to our beef supply, and then the generosity of people. We still live in a great country. We're not as divided as people think because of what they see on the national news a lot of times. And it's very endearing, and it really has encouraged me to believe that our future in America is still, our best days are still ahead. So it's been a tragedy, but it's also been a miracle as to how people across the nation have responded.
Andy Holloway is the Texas A&M Extension Agent for Hemphill County. Texas Agriculture Commissioner Sid Miller has been providing unwavering support to agricultural producers as they deal with the aftermath of the devastating wildfires. I reached out to him for an update.
We, responded immediately. I had about $4 million worth of feed and hay donated to me, so we had to, figure out the logistics on how to get that dropped and how to get it delivered to the supply points. I opened up my hay hotline, and that's kind of a clearinghouse where we connect farmers that need the hay with farmers that want to donate the hay. So we've been operating that. I opened up my STAR Fund, which is acronym for State of Texas Agriculture Relief. And that's a monetary fund where we raise money from individuals, corporations, farm groups, anybody that wants to donate. So we've raised a little over $1 million. That 100% of that will go back to those farmers and ranchers to help them purchase stuff that insurance, crop insurance, or homeowners insurance, or doesn't cover. Most of that will be T-post and wire to replace the fencing they've lost, but we're also going to help make whole those volunteer fire departments up there. Their finances are pretty much devastated, so we'll get them some help. And then I created a farmer mental health / suicide hotline. We have a nationwide suicide line. It's 988, but they really don't understand agriculture or farmers or what they're going through. So mine's different. It's specifically for people in agriculture. My operators have 300 hours of training in how to respond and how to meet the needs of these rural folks. we can not only get them some mental health help, but we can refer them to maybe some programs at USDA that could help them, or maybe the SBA, or even my office, my STAR program, and there's even programs at the American Farm Bureau and the cattle raisers that we, you know, can refer them to. So they answer the phone within 30 seconds, and then I have them call them back the next day and keep calling them back until they say, don't call me anymore. You know, we want to follow up, make sure these people are all right. So that's kind of what we've been doing. I'm concerned that, you know, in another month or two, people are going to forget about this fire and quit donating the hay and feed. And it'd be a critical time right in the heat of the summer, because we won't be able to, you know, graze those grasslands until they, you know, heal back up, which at earliest would probably be fall. It'll probably be a full 2 years before they get back to where they need to be. You know, we had to close and evacuate 16 schools, David. Two of them had some fire damage. We had over 100 miles of electric lines on the ground. So a lot of those communities were without electricity. A lot of those ranches were without water because they didn't have any electricity to you know, run the wells. We lost over 500 homes and barns up there. Structures gone, lost in the fire. So that was very, very devastating. Probably lost 10,000 head of cattle, you know, that died in the fire. But my estimate, we're probably going to have to call another 20 or 25,000 that have burnt hooves or burnt udders. They're not salvageable. And probably for the next 6 months, we're going to be selling cattle that have lung damage. They've, you know, got smoke or burnt lungs, so they're going to kind of act like cattle that have had pneumonia. So a lot of those will have to go to town. So you're talking to Andy Holloway about those genetics. So, again, that's years and years of selective breeding that's going to be gone. You know, it's going to be hard to overcome that. But tell you what, these farmers and ranchers up there, they're a tough lot. They've had these fires come through there before. They're very resilient. They know how to bounce back from adversity. They are a tough lot. I think they'll make their way through it. But they're going to need a little help. We've been out of hay here in Texas for the last 2 years. We haven't cut any, made any hay. We made one cutting, and it was only a half yield. So a lot of this hay is coming from out of state. My commissioner friend, Rick Payton, Alabama, sent 27 trailer truck loads. We got about that media again from Hugh Weathers, commissioner in South Carolina. So it's coming in from all over the United States. People have been very, very generous.
I saw a bunch of hay coming in from Utah. That was really good looking.
Oh, yeah. So hopefully, now, there's two types of cattle up there. There's stalker cattle operation. Those are the young ones that are just grazed out and end up in the feedlots. Those cattle weren't too much of a problem because you can just gather those cattle and go straight to the feedlot with them. The problem is the cow-calf operators. There's no place to go with those mama cows. And it's calving season, so you don't really want to be hauling them around anyway while they're pregnant. And so we've got to find some, either hand feed them everything they get, or find some new grazing ground for them. So anybody out there listening wants to, you know, has any grazing, let us know. You can find all of my programs at texasagriculture.gov. You can find our agri-stress helpline there. You can just do a web search and it'll pop up. The number will be right there. It's easy to find. Our hay hotline's right there, and our STAR fund. So that's where you need to go if you want to, you know, help these people out.
I'm going to go ahead and take a caller, and we have Steven on the line. And Steven, you're on the air with Texas Agricultural Commissioner Sid Miller.
Hi, Sid. Yeah, I just want to say thank you so much for helping these people out. I know they've been through a lot. And I know that the battle really isn't over yet, because now that they're being challenged by the H5N1 virus, you know, they're kind of being double whammied. Do you have any advice for how these farmers are going to handle both the influenza virus that's going around as well as the fire damage?
Thank you for the call, Stephen.
Well, yeah, so Stephen, we do have, for the first time ever, the bird flu in our dairy herds in that part of the state. For 3 weeks, we couldn't figure out what it was, and it was kind of a mystery disease. We finally tested for bird flu when we found some dead birds on the dairies, And so the good news is that that is carried by waterfowl, and migration season is over. Those birds are gone. We haven't had a new case of bird flu in our dairy herds for over 2 weeks. So I think we're good there. Another positive about it, it doesn't affect the cows. Only about 10% of the cows in the herd get it. So that's a plus. And the ones that get it, get over it in about a week. I mean, it's kind of like they have a case of the flu, you know, for a week. So they go back into production after that. And so we didn't have to destroy a lot of milk. So it's not enough that's going to affect the dairy product supply. None of it got into the food chain. Even if it did, we, for the most part, pasteurize milk, and that kills all the pathogens. You know, the only thing that, you know, that could get into is raw milk or raw milk products. So you might, you know, use a little caution on that. I think you're okay. And then we had an outbreak in one of our laying flocks up there, and had to destroy 1,600,000 hens and about 400,000 pullets. So that was rough. But again, none of those eggs got into the food chain. And again, cooking eggs destroys the pathogens. So I think we're okay there. And that's a lot of hens, but it's not enough to affect the inventory. So no price spikes in the dairy products or eggs, and no health hazards either. So those are some positive things that come out of it.
The infrastructure, you mentioned water, trying to move water around. I know a lot of the ranchers used solar panels for solar pumps, and that all got burnt up, and the pumps got burnt up. They can't wait for checks to come from insurance companies, and all the programs that you mentioned, you're helping them get back on their feet. So you know, do you see the system working, Commissioner?
It has. We've been through this several times. This is not something new for us, so we're pretty well prepared, you know, to respond to it. This is about the third time that country up there is burnt off. We only had two deaths due to the fire, so that was good. Two is too many. Don't get me. Sure. Don't take me wrong on that. But it could have been a lot worse. Like I said, people up there are kind of prepared for that, so they know how to evacuate and get out of there in time. So that's we're fortunate that we didn't lose more people than that.
You are a statewide office holder in the state of Texas. You represent the entirety of the state of Texas, as well as, but you know, particularly the agriculture, the rural parts. How do you help us get everyone to understand that we all need to get behind the folks who lost so much due to the Smokehouse Creek fire?
Well, you know, when you think about it, some of those ranches up there, we've got Century Farms up there. Of course, we have an award for those. You know, might have been in the family four, five, six generations, and they lost everything. You know, the ranch house that their great grandfather built, it's gone. The barns that their ancestors built are gone. That's a very, very stressful time. So, you know, donating money is good, feed's good, T-posts and wires good, but they need your prayers more than they need anything else. So I would encourage everybody to pray for that area of the state, and all the way over into Oklahoma, too. It wasn't just Texans. That fire creeped over into western Oklahoma, too.
So they're saying that we need to be thinking about this fire. It's the biggest in the state history, that we don't know if we're going to get more like this. How do you think we should prepare to respond to fires of this size?
Well, there's some things that we need to do. There's actually the legislature has just held 3 days of public hearings up in Pampa, Texas, right in the heart of that. They are coming out of there with some good ideas and good recommendations on how we can be better prepared, and we will be better prepared. We'll take those into the next legislative session in January. And we'll implement a lot of those good ideas and good programs that we probably should have already been doing.
One of the ideas is a dedicated Air Force for firefighting. Right now, they use contractors, and that kind of slows things down. Do you think that would be a way to help protect these areas?
I think so. I think they needed five planes that we could strategically place around the state. We can pretty much tell what the high fire danger areas are, whether it be the Panhandle or the Rio Grande Valley or West Texas. And we need those assets in place. We don't need to respond and have to come, you know, 600 or 700 miles or from another state before we're there on it. You've got a very short window to snuff these fires out before they become, you know, a raging wildfire. So the key is to get on them and get on them quick.
The price tag that was floated for this operation is $500 million. Some people might think that's a lot of money, but can you kind of explain how that's an investment?
Well, we lost thousands and thousands of miles of fence up there. A mile of fence today costs you about $15,000 to replace. So the cost of just replacing those fences up there is going to be way more than the cost of those planes. So that's one way to look at it. Lost revenue, you know, we hadn't even talked about that, but, you know, they're not going to be have a calf crop. A lot of those cows that did survive will abort, or they lost their calves in the fire. No one talks about this, but a big part of those ranchers' income up there is wildlife, hunting leases. There's no wildlife. It's all gone. There's no way that they're going to have any income from, you know, the hunting, you know, quail hunting, deer hunting up there. There's good whitetail. There's even mule deer in that part of the state. So it's devastated all the way around.
Sid Miller is the Texas Agriculture Commissioner. We have to take a quick break. Stay with us.
The EarthX 2024 Environmental and Sustainability Congress of Conferences is happening in Dallas, April 22nd through the 26th. Bringing together all sides with one important mission, protect our planet. For info, earthx.org.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're following up on the Smokehouse Creek Fire. The largest wildfire in Texas history is now out, but the disaster continues. Lisa Johnson is the county judge for Hemp Hill County. People lost homes. They were given temporary shelter. What does the long-term recovery look like for people who need shelter?
Well, so that's a pretty broad range because we have people that were insured. We have people that were uninsured. That number was relatively small, maybe 15 or 20% of the homeowners weren't insured. Some people have already made a pretty good leap towards recovery. There were quite a few houses for sale in Canadian, and some folks have already started the steps to purchasing some of those homes. We have some families that are planning to rebuild already on the side of their home that burned. And then it goes along to the people that were renting, and it's a little trickier to find rental property here. We have some folks that are still staying with family. And so it ranges anywhere from folks who are still in pretty temporary type shelter to those who have already secured permanent housing. So it's kind of all over the place there, but we have a group of volunteers that's been in touch with all of these families, and we're trying to meet immediate needs. And then in the next few weeks, we'll be looking at those longer term needs. So it's quite a process.
So the federal government has been helpful in the recovery with the FEMA disaster relief and the Small Business Administration and other agencies, but there are some key FEMA programs and resources that the Smokehouse Creek Fire appears not to qualify for because the benchmarks in the law, they say you have to have a certain number of homes damaged. All right. And then you have a really high dollar value of losses. You just don't reach that with this fire. And because this is an area that's not heavily populated, it is the rural prairie. So it does seem like that, you know, if we're going to be seeing disasters like this, big scale disasters, that we need to take a look at these programs and find out why can't we access those dollars? That's what they're for. And this is an important area for the country for food production. So I mean, shouldn't there be some waivers or some way to get those dollars?
Right. So the federal programs are twofold. There's the FEMA programs, and there's, you know, the individual assistance, and that's the one that's the $54 million mark that we won't even come close to hitting that. So there won't be that type of individual assistance. However, there are some federal programs on the agricultural side that will assist ranchers. The USDA has programs. I believe FSA maybe is the one that has programs to help rebuild fencing, although that fencing has to be built to a certain standard, and then that program will reimburse 75% of that cost once it's established that it meets those standards. And so there are some federal programs on the agricultural side that will help. Now, there's still gaps there because they're not going to cover 100% of loss, but they do help. And that's where these monetary donations that we've received in Hemphill County will at least go a ways toward filling that gap on the agriculture side. Now, we also have donations and assistance for the homeowner side that will assist them, but there may be even some larger gaps there, depending on whether people were insured or not.
I do wonder about the insurance situation. On the Gulf Coast, we have the windstorm insurance program that helps people over there. Do we need something like that for the rural Texas, the Panhandle Texas, because insurance is getting harder and harder to even get, much less pay for?
Right, right. And the cost is going up so much, and I sure don't know what this fire will do to insurance rates, but of course it puts us all on edge about what that's going to look like in the next few years. But it may be something that we need to look at, or that insurance companies need to look at, so that people can not just get insurance, but insurance that's affordable. I mean, I think a lot of the reason why there are people that are uninsured is because it's just cost prohibitive. And then you end up in a situation like this where somebody's literally got nothing left. And that's heartbreaking. And that's where we as a community want to make sure that these folks know that they're not alone, that we're going to try to do whatever we can for them over the months and even years to come.
Lisa Johnson is the county judge for Hemphill County. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past episodes of Texas Matters on our website at tpr.org, and you can download and subscribe to us wherever you find cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.